It's Backspin Golf with Matthew Lawrence. Your 8:03 tee time every Sunday morning right here on ESPN Sports Radio 1300. Be a part of the show by tweeting Matthew at ML on WLXG. Ask questions or comments on what you'd like Matthew to talk about on the show. Today's show is sponsored by French Lick Resort, Lexington Parks and Recreation, Play Golf Lexington, and by Edwin Watts Golf. Let's join your host, Matthew Lawrence, for Backspin Golf.
Good morning. Wow. What a couple of days. Children's Charity. What, John? Well, I'll explain. Children's Charity Classic in the books again. And just amazing what all of the people involved do every year. As I've said before, you've probably heard me say, it's my 29th year of playing in this tournament. I've made some pretty good friendships, and I've also found out I hate some people. It's taken me 29 years to figure that out. No, just fantastic. Even though the weather did not cooperate for part of the tournament, we had a great, great time. It was great seeing all the friends that I only get to see once a year now. And so thanks to Kim Sweezy and Doug Flynn and Johnny Bench and Matthew Mitchell and everybody, Carol Detchen, everybody involved with putting this tournament on. We have a great show today. Some really, really interesting stories. Perry French first will join me. We'll talk about the Open from last week. Keith Hirschland will join me, who was with the Golf Channel and ESPN for years, talking about the actual TV production of what goes into doing an Open Championship. And then my friend Brandon Urban, you're going to want to hear this. He did a 100-hole hike last Monday and ended up playing 181 holes of golf. Unbelievable. So, Mikey, and tell a little secret if you're listening, stay tuned. It's Backspin Golf on ESPN Sports Radio 1300.
Now, joining Matthew on Backspin Golf is Perry French, PGA professional and territory manager of Strixon Cleveland Golf.
Dun, 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 dun. Perry French. That's U.S. Open music. Perry French.
I always think of that.
Dramatic.
That U.S. Open ABC intro.
Yeah. I don't want it in my head. Don't do it. I don't want
from,
that.
No. From way back when.
Yeah. It is from way back. It'll go right in there, and that's all I'll do today is hear that. Hi, Perry French.
Hey, what's happening, Matt?
All right.
Big week for you, right? You got your big tournament coming up, the Children's Charity. Hopefully it won't be totally washed out.
One of the days is absolutely going to be rained out. But, you know, I played in a tournament in Wilmington, North Carolina one time. Same kind of deal. Practice round Thursday, tournament Friday and Saturday, that it hadn't rained in North Carolina in a month. And naturally, that Friday morning, we woke up, and for 2 days, it was sideways rain. The golf was canceled for both days. We had a bowling tournament.
Oh, that's instead. Great call, yeah.
And we had a great time. But here's the thing about these tournaments. Everybody involved with the Children's Charity Classic has worked literally since the day after last year's tournament, a whole year on this. Look at it. Look at this week, 78, sunny, and all of a sudden for 2 days you might have rain. It sucks.
It really sucks. It is the downside of that, and certainly weather plays an effect in everyone's golf plans, and it had a big effect on the U.S. Open this past week, as we were discussing earlier.
There you go, trying to refocus me to the U.S. Open.
You're an actor. You like to do your...
You're like a wrangler. You're like a sheepdog, and I'm the sheep. I'm the cattle, whatever.
So
it is.
We were talking how weather was truly the biggest factor in the tournament, aside from great play by a couple of players.
Let's start. So I see you. I say hello, good morning, and the first thing out of your mouth, because we haven't spoken since the live show last Sunday, the first thing out of your mouth is, how about, what a drag, how about that Open? And you were like, wait a minute, Brooks was good, and then you, so now on the air, tell me what
I thought he was. He actually slayed the golf course. He overpowered it. He was. It was as good as Justin Thomas was on Saturday. Yeah. Dramatically with the crazy finish and shots that really were outstanding, and culminated with the 3-wood, 3-wood for eagle. Brooks was just dominant from tee to green the whole day. Of the players that you could watch, and after 4 or 5 holes, you get a feel for who's got what going on. His competition got off to kind of a rough start. Our guy, Hideki, got off to a pretty good start, birdie 3 of the first 7, but he was so far back at 6. All he could do was maybe post a number, which he did, 12, to keep them honest.
And which would have won. They had the stat. All but four opens.
Everybody finished 10 under par. All but four opens. Crazy. So I say it was anticlimactic, but we're all waiting, like we do for most U.S. Opens. It's for the shoe to fall on the champ, the proverbial champ. When's he going to make the double bogey? The golf course, because of the weather, wasn't playing its true test. Wasn't fast in the landing areas. Ball wasn't running into conditions. Could roll through. And it did a few times, and we could see quite a difference when the ball went from the fairway through that 3 foot of first cut into the second cut.
Right.
Let alone into the heather, the fescue,
the hay.
Fescues me, right? And then we saw the greens receiving shots that. The 2-3 was from Justin Thomas. Tremendous shots, all be it what they are, but you just can't imagine the greens receiving 3-woods.
Right.
The greens were full size. They weren't narrowed down to small inning areas.
They were huge.
Yeah. Small inning areas that typically a U.S. Open is because of the firmness that you have to hit in the spot. It's going to release, or if you don't get it, it's going to run itself into a lot of runoffs, which there were plenty of there.
Right.
So the golf course was a little defenseless.
Defenseless, correct.
As you stated. I thought the dramatic part of the U.S. Open that we all, and you were calling for a playoff, which was,
I thought
was a great call. I was looking for a winner. I thought that was never going to be in play. As it got going, wasn't even concerned about a playoff. It would have been, the golf course wasn't going to lend it to that.
Yeah.
And Brooks did the job. He did it, and great champion, our 7th consecutive
First-time major winner. Here's the other thing that
the field wins again.
Yeah, that's right. I picked Rory, so we knew where that went.
Yeah. I had Ricky on the Sunday call. I thought Ricky could show up on. And
yeah,
again,
me too.
Just didn't have it.
Yeah.
Hard to have that magic for 4 straight days.
Right. But he will have it, and he'll win more than
we've
one.
Seen it. It's tremendous. You know, it's
All right. Now the thought just went right out of my head. We were talking about. I picked Rory, playoff. Nah, I can't get it back. I have no idea.
Sorry.
It was really good, too.
Dang
I can
it.
Tell you that. Oh, I know what it was. Brooks Koepka, first player in major championship history to hit 80% of the fairways and 80% of the greens.
Wow.
I don't care how big the golf course is.
Exactly. Still amazing. Amazing ball striking day. No question.
And the distance. Okay. And here's the other thing. And we talked. Never was it more obvious. Because the first 3 days especially, almost no wind.
Yeah.
Little fluttery breezes and stuff.
But casual.
These guys, every single one of them, they're hitting wedges 135, sand wedges 135 yards. All these guys. I mean, you know.
Well, the state of the modern game is just that. It's still a power game, but with someone said, who's not a power player? I mean.
All of them.
I know. I mean, even Brian Harman. He's not short.
No, but they kept talking about him like he was me.
He doesn't have, he doesn't have 600-yard 3-woods in him, right?
Right.
200-300-yard 3-woods in him. So there's a difference in that aspect, but. The risk reward that Justin Thomas had to go for the green and pull a shot off is what makes that drama. If he misses that shot, both of those 3-woods could have led to bogeys or double bogeys.
Right.
Certainly not making birdie and eagle.
Right.
So it's all part of the drama and the fun part of golf, and that's why we talk about rules of golf, and I'm glad they're going to continue to keep the golf ball. No bifurcation. We want everybody to play their own golf ball. Match up your best skill of products and in your player profile to fit your game. And that, as long as they do that, you will see some dynamics where the player who takes the risk and the reward. So
yeah, but it's a big question. I've said this before. Jack Nicklaus has always said that it's not the equipment,
right?
It's not anything. It's the golf ball, and he's proposed several times
right.
to put a cap on the golf ball, so to speak, to have the technology only allow certain people to hit it longer because they're mm-hmm. bigger. But
well, the one ball fits all rule is what he wants.
Right.
Tour golf ball, if you will.
Yeah.
But that's just not there's too many variables.
That'll
in technology.
Never happen.
That'll never happen. And we don't want that to happen.
No,
I mean, it's an individual sport. It's not like all Major League Baseball players have to play a wooden bat in the same dimension
right.
made baseball.
Mm-hmm.
So this is just a different game. And I don't think it'll happen. But it's going to have an effect on how the winners of these – of all tour events, but certainly the majors come into P, and that's where the field is wide open, and we've seen seven
right.
consecutive events where it's a first timer. When those players at the skill level they have their day in the sun, they're as good from 1 to 150.
Yeah.
Xander, I can't pronounce his last
he was
name.
Awesome. Shoffley,
you know his last name. Here's a kid who just got his tour status.
Mm-hmm.
Web.com won a play in Web.com last year and
right.
shows up this year. First ever U.S. Open finishes 10 under par. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
These guys aren't afraid of
right.
the venue.
Right.
Where, I'm sorry, if we're at Oakland Hills,
yeah.
even in today's market, Xander's not shooting 10 under par.
Right.
So I'm going to say to you,
yeah.
as you are a Johnny Miller hater,
yes.
there is a variance between Johnny Miller's 63,
mm-hmm.
Jack Nicklaus's 63, Tom Weisskopf's 63,
mm-hmm.
at venues, historic classic venues that have 4 to 8 inch rough from mm-hmm. tee to green and around the greens, as to what Justin Thomas did.
And narrow fairways. Yeah.
Now, all the banter that was Johnny Miller's tweet.
Disgusting, classless
okay.
remarks.
I still would say, and I've heard this other discussions about this, is that the favor still goes to Johnny Miller because of conditions and setup.
It rained the night before when Johnny Miller shot 63.
No, I think that's a valid point.
Yeah.
So both golf courses are very similar in their conditions in that aspect. But the technology story and the venue itself, I just don't see, and we probably won't see it.
Yeah.
I'm kind of with you. Mm-hmm. I'm an old school history guy. I like the fact that they've chosen some venues, and we're going back to Shinnecock,
mm-hmm.
of kind of a similar venue to what they just got done playing.
Well, kind of, but
I don't
they
mind
will have
mixing
wind
the
there.
U.S.
They
Open.
Will,
yeah, they got
they're
the,
on the water, so
there
you
is
got a
going
lot
to be.
Other
there's
stuff.
An ocean over there,
right? Yes, there is.
so it'll be interesting to see that how it plays out, and I think, but I from a traditionalist standpoint, I do like more of my U.S. Open venues
mm-hmm.
played with the
well,
high rough.
I agree. I thought Erin Hills was beautiful.
Putting services were great too.
They were perfect. But yeah. I didn't like. I'm an old school U.S. Open guy.
Yeah.
Too. So, Chambers Bay was a disaster.
Well, that's what's weird. They 2 years later we're back at what could have been another Chambers Bay. But
I know.
Things kept that from happening.
Right.
And I think the golf course. Yeah.
By the way, we were talking about technology and golf balls and all that.
Mm-hmm.
How about Cameron Champ?
Yeah. Yeah.
Here's a kid.
Scotty Scheffler, amateur.
Wait a minute. Cameron Champ, his club head speed is 134.
Yeah, he led the
134.
Yeah. That's miles per hour.
I mean, what's the average PGA Tour player? 108?
110.
110?
110 to 112 is
134.
It's silly.
And it's not like you look, he's another one. Justin Thomas is 5'8 or 9 and 150 pounds.
Yeah. Yeah.
For goodness sake.
Yeah.
Is it just the physics of their golf swing mm-hmm. as well as technology?
Yeah,
but
it's a combination, but certainly their physics, their physical makeup and motion,
mm-hmm.
rotational motion, create the power.
Right.
And that, you know, is what allows a 150-pound player at 5'10" to hit as far as a guy who's 6'2"
right.
and, you know, 220. So now,
it just disgusts me.
It's amazing. The game is changed a lot. I think it'll remain on the change because of those players like
mm-hmm.
you just mentioned that were coming on board. They're always
Cameron Champ.
Yep. Scotty Scheffler actually
yep.
beat him by a shot to finish his low amateur. These are players who are gonna they're coming out every year. It's gonna be
and there's so many of them.
It's going to be interesting to see how the tour shapes up. There may be two PGA tours before too long.
What?
I think the web.com tour and the PGA Tour will split. You'll have two PGA Tours. You're going to have 300 players playing for them. That's how good the field's going to be in the next 10 years.
Wow. All right, we'll talk about this.
Just thought I'd throw it out there for you.
Except for I'm having thoughts of never having you on with me again because of your Johnny Miller comments.
I'll have to think about it for next week.
Just
the way I feel about it.
Yeah, well, that's fine.
The way
I feel is I don't want to talk to you anymore. Have a good week.
Backspin Golf with Matthew Lawrence is sponsored by Lexington Parks and Recreation. Book your tee time at one of their 5 public courses at lexingtonky.gov. Play golf, Lexington.
As always, on my show, I'm blessed to be able to talk to people that not only have a tremendous wealth of knowledge about the sport we love of golf, but are people that I respect immensely. And Keith Hirschlund is one of those guys. He's just one of those guys. Good morning, Keith.
Good morning, sir. So I just want to say thanks. It's always an honor to be asked to join you. So I appreciate it very much.
Do you hear that, Sean? Yeah. See, no, I got to make sure like people around here hear that every once in a while. you've been on the show before, and you actually joined Mikey and me the other day during the day, and I wanted to have you back because for those of you listening who might not know about Keith, he is from, you know, I started to do some reading and stuff. Your background in broadcasting and production comes from your family, your parents, and you were there for the creation of basically two of the biggest sports networks, maybe the two biggest in history, I think. I'm partial to the Golf Channel because I'm a golfer, but ESPN, for a long, long time, you were, you know, one of the great producers in the business, and it's always great to talk to you about, and by the way, the book is called Cover Me Boys, I'm Going In. We'll talk about your other book in a minute, but Cover Me Boys, I'm Going In, about those years at the beginning of ESPN and the beginning of the Golf Channel, which you were there for. And I always love to talk to you about the production aspect of majors like we just witnessed last week with the U.S. Open. So let's start there and get your thoughts on Fox and the way they handled everything. And we'll leave out the Joe Buck calling the girlfriend by the wrong name.
Yeah. where to start?
Yeah.
I'm always amazed when I wander into a major championship television production compound. It's just the size and scope of it compared to even a regular tour event is amazing. And a regular tour event is still, you know, up
impressive
to trucks.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, just people, you know, hundred golf carts and people running around, you know, everybody knowing exactly what they're doing. But if you look at it as an outsider, it looks like, just a massive craziness. So just to put that on television, and especially now for 9.5 or 10 hours a day, is an amazing accomplishment.
How, talk to us a little bit about when we first started televising. I mean, the size is one thing and the number of people, but technically what production crews and people have to do now is it makes things great for us to watch, but it's so totally different than, you know, I remember getting up on a Saturday morning, you know, and watching a telecast of the Open Championship from St. Andrews at 5 a.m. And you could barely see the coverage. It was grainy. Yeah. It was black and white. It was all this stuff. And now we're getting shot tracers and all the stuff they have. It's so much more complicated now.
It is. I mean, and in a weird way, it's so much more complicated. But at the same time, it's almost less labor intensive and less manpower intensive. And don't get me wrong; it's still very much a heavy lift on both of those fronts. But when I first started, I mean, you mentioned it when I was growing up, I mean, golf on television was an afterthought. It was 90 minutes on Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah.
And this was for most regular PGA Tour events. The majors was another story even then, but not to the extent that it is now. But they'd come on the air, and I had a friend, a guy who worked with me at the Golf Channel, who we lured away from CBS. He was one of CBS's production people, and he used to, his first job in television was sitting next to Steve Melnick in the 15th Tower as his stats guy, information guy. And he told us stories about times that, many times that because a football game or a CBS sports spectacular would run long, that they only covered four holes, 15, 16, 17, and 18. And they'd come on the air, and the leaders would be playing the 16th hole, and they'd never do, they never got on the air. And now it's just, you can't, and I say it, my wife says it, a lot of people around the game of golf say it, this could be, you could say I'm being, heretical, but there's too much golf on television right now.
Yeah.
It's just oversaturation, in my opinion. And to the hardcore golf fan who sits and watches it all, that, might sound like, how can you say that? But it's just too much.
Yeah. I totally get what you're saying. And again, it's about content. So, excuse me, you have the Golf Channel, 24 hours devoted to golf. They need content. They need, we remember, and we were talking a minute ago, I mentioned about ESPN, and I remember sitting in my apartment in New York when ESPN started and watching tractor pulls.
Yep.
They had nothing.
Man competition.
Yeah, they had nothing to put on the air. And it's hard for us to believe that now, but when you look back at it, so now we have the technology to televise all this golf and do all these shows and everything, but it does kind of take away. Like, I have no desire to watch the golf tournament this week because I watched, 4 days straight of the Open last week, and I just, maybe I'll tune in for a little while, but it's not that big a deal to me anymore because every week you get to see it.
Yeah, and now you can also online, you can watch featured groups. So if you want to watch, Bubba Watson play Thursday, if he's your favorite guy, there's no reason to turn on the Golf Channel because you can, through your PGA Tour Live app,
right?
You can watch every shot Bubba Watson hits, and then you're satisfied.
Before we move on, I want to talk for a minute about Big Lies, too. But when you were producing for the Golf Channel and for all those years, was there any one thing that stands out to you where you were in that truck and things just went completely sideways while you were on the air?
Oh, boy.
Just pick one, right?
Yeah, I could write a whole other book about that. In the beginning, you got to realize that in the beginning, nobody thought that this was something that was going to be successful. And we were, and Joe Gibbs would tell you this in a heartbeat that, the network was bleeding money and, it's expensive. It's an expensive proposition. Live television golf is really expensive. So, we were tasked to do, hours and hours of live event production with as few resources as possible and make it work. So there was always stuff not working, breaking down. I'll keep it quick, but a couple of stories. The one thing that really stands out when things just got super crazy in the truck was the Kelly Tillman, Nick Faldo conversation at Kapalua. And that whole thing was, it was confusing initially anyway. It's always confusing because it was as we were going off the air. So, in the last couple of minutes of a show, you give direction to the talent. Here's what, you got 2 minutes, wrap it up. Here are a couple of ideas, but you guys go wherever you want to go.
Mm-hmm.
And then I kind of turned my attention to other things. Like the last 30 seconds was devoted to Rich Lerner, who would actually say the goodbye. But at the same time, then we're queuing up slow motion reactions of the leaders and thing, and then there's just a million things going on in the truck. So you stop, you give the announcers their marching orders. And then you turn your attention to other things. And, when Kelly and Nick had that conversation, nobody heard it. And we just did our thing and went off the air. And everybody's, and all of a sudden it was like craziness in the truck. And what just happened? Because somebody said, did you hear what she just said? And then you go back and rewind the tapes and you listen and you think, oh, boy, here it comes.
Oh, boy.
So that was one thing. The other one was we were in Reno one year doing the event in Reno, and all the monitors in the broadcast booth went out. So you can imagine, you've done live sports, and you know that in most sports, the talent is sitting at courtside or, you know, up in the press box at a baseball game or at a football game. Well, in golf, they're sitting in a trailer somewhere or in a tower on the 18th green, and the only thing they're looking at is either their hole or a monitor that has what I, you know, everything that I'm doing. They don't know what's coming on TV until I tell them what's coming on TV. So all the monitors went out. So they're flying blind. So I sat in the truck, not only producing the show, but giving Brian and Kurt Byram, Brian Anderson and Kurt Byram, the constant play-by-play of what we're showing. So I'm saying, Kurt, this is Kirk Triplett. We're on the 15th green. This is Kirk Triplett. He's over about a 15-foot birdie putt. And he's taking a look. Oh, no, he backs off. He wants to take one. And I'm doing this. I'm also saying, cue up blue and re-cue that shot on red and make sure we don't miss, you know. And the guys in the booth are like, I don't know how you're doing this, but this is, you know, the only way we could have gotten through that. It was about an eight-minute segment.
Oh, man.
They didn't have any monitors.
Which seems like 8 hours, too, when you're going
through.
For them,
it probably felt like 8 days.
Oh, my Lord. That's awesome. Before I let you go, speaking with Keith Hirschland here, I want to talk to you for just a minute about Big Lies. You've been involved in sports all your life, and you Cover Me Boys, I'm Going In, is one of the best books, period, not just a sports book, but it's a fantastic read. And now you come out with this novel, which is also fantastic, called Big Lies. You're a Renaissance guy. You can write anything.
I don't know about that, but Big Lies was fun because it was, you know, I thought that we, you know, when I wrote the first book, it was just telling stories.
Right.
You know, remembering what happened. I had I have boxes and boxes of notes I took along the way. You know, that was just relating stories about what happened, and those things really happened. And then I decided, well, I enjoyed writing that so much. Let's give a mystery. Let's give fiction a crack. And, you know, it's a lot harder because you have to make it all up.
Right.
And,
yeah.
You know, what makes sense on page 20 has to make sense again on page 120. And if it doesn't, then, you failed. So, but it was fun. And I'm writing a third one now, and I've got an idea for a fourth one. So
oh, my Lord.
I guess this is going to be my future.
Wow. Well, if it's anything like the first two, you got a great future ahead of you because they're both fantastic. And again, thanks for joining Mikey and me the other day, and especially this morning because you always bring so much, and I'm very appreciative of you. So thanks,
Well, I enjoy it every time, and I'm at your beck and call. Whenever you need me, just give me a shout.
Okay. And it actually would be great to play some golf with you sometime, maybe.
I'd love that.
Okay. All right. I'll go out to Reno with you, to your old stomping grounds.
Yeah.
All right.
We keep saying that.
I know.
We got to make it happen.
Okay, pal. Thanks, Keith.
All right, man. Okay.
Backspin Golf with Matthew Lawrence is sponsored by French Lick Resort. Visit them online at FrenchLick.com.
All right, now, here on Backspin Golf, we always talk about the great people we have on from all over the world, really, from not only America but other countries. But now we're into something that, frankly, I don't even know how to describe it. So I'm going to let my friend Brandon Urban describe it because he did it. But I'm at a truly a loss for words. The awe that I feel for you, I am in awe of you, Brandon Urban.
Well, thanks. I appreciate it.
Well, I know it doesn't mean that much, but I don't say that. Sean, have I ever said that to anybody on this show before? No. And I've had some pretty impressive people, but
right.
I am in awe of you. All right. Let's start with during the show over the last couple of years, we had Jim Colton on the show talking about the 100-hole hike idea. And we have pretty loyal listeners over the last 4 years. And so people kind of know about this. I've talked about it on our daily show. Well, we just had the 100-hole hike. Listen how I backed my way into this with you. That's awesome.
You're jumping right in.
I am. I'm jumping right in. And the idea of the 100-hole hike is to raise funds for different charities. Or I know at Ballyneal it started with a caddy who had an accident. It was to raise money for him. And people can donate either a lump sum or by whole. They can pay a certain amount, and it all goes to charity. That's the background of this. So today, let's see, when was this? On Monday you did this?
Monday, yes.
Monday. Okay. Take it from there. You're in Minnesota now, but you went to Colorado, right, to Ballyneal?
Yeah, so the event on Monday was at Ballyneal in Holyoke, Colorado, and I've done it there the last few years. Jim Colton is a member there, and that's kind of the home of Hunter Hole Hike. So I've been lucky enough to be able to venture out that direction and do the hike there for the last few years. So there were four of us out there on Monday, and we all hiked for different charities, like you said, and it was an absolutely fantastic day.
Yeah, all right. That makes it sound pretty simple. Yeah. It was a great 100-hole hike, and it was a great day, and we were in Colorado. No, my friend. So I'm following along on Twitter. And there's a reason this is called the 100-hole hike. Is that correct? You're supposed to walk 100 holes of golf, correct?
Well, at least.
Okay. Well, see, that isn't put out there. Well, I'm good. Now people are wondering, what the heck is he talking about? You ended up with, here comes the drum roll. Tell us how many holes you walked and played.
181.
Oh. All right, here's my first question of many. So you started at what time in the morning?
I teed off at 4:45 in the morning.
I'm guessing it was still, Sean's making a face. Yeah, I know, that's early, Sean, but was it dark? Did you have flashlights like 4:45 in the morning?
So the sun is kind of peeking over the tops of the dunes, and you can see a little bit. so usually by about the second or third hole, you're good. But we got to try to maximize as much daylight as we can, you know. So we'll take every little inch of it.
Well, when I saw the final tally, I was getting ready to do something, and I said to the guy I was with, 181 holes, and we started trying to figure out how that was like 18 hours of golf or something. It was almost impossible to do. You finished at when the sun was setting, I think, which in Colorado during this time of year is probably what, 9:30 or something?
It was about 9 o'clock, and it was pretty dark. We we actually had to break out the glow ball for the final hole.
Ooh, glow ball stuff. Nice.
Yeah.
We don't hear about that on Backspin Golf that often.
I don't know if I had ever heard about it either, but we broke it out, and it was pretty neat.
Now, there are so many things. First of all, how do you train for this?
I don't think you do. I mean, you know, last year I kind of tried to get to the gym more and run more, but I honestly don't think that it really matters. The more Jim and I were talking about this in the car ride out to the club. Every year, I think it gets easier.
Yeah,
you know, the more you do it, like you experience certain things each year that you're like, okay, I can cut that out, or I can do this, and I can get more golf holes in. So I really think it's just a mindset of you just have to keep walking, and no matter what you do. I mean, it was almost, you know, my Fitbits. I don't know if you saw my Fitbits.
I wanted to talk about that. I did. Like, yeah, say that again. How many steps?
101,000 change. And like 350 sets of stairs and
8,400 calories, I think I saw.
Yeah, 8,000 calories burned throughout the day.
So, okay, skinny. Go ahead.
So I think that, you know, it's just this mindset. Like your legs are going to hurt regardless. I mean, you know, that's just a hard thing to train for, especially for, you know, us middle-aged guys that like to play golf. Like, we don't have, we're not out hitting the gym, or we're not ultra marathoners, or
right,
most of the guys that do this aren't. So I think regardless, you're going to hurt, you're going to have some pain, and it's just this mindset of you just have to keep walking and hitting golf shots.
It in a way, it kind of is like running a marathon or doing anything like that. So you tee off, you peg your ball on the first tee, and you know you have this whole day ahead of you of, we love to play golf, but this is a little bit different. I saw that Jim caddied for you. Is that right?
Yeah, he did. I had some Ballyneal Club caddies for the first seven rounds of the day. I had four different caddies throughout the morning that carried from, you know, one round to two and a half rounds.
Right. And now, are you running, or are you walking fast? Are you, or are you just playing the hole?
You know, it's funny. I get this question a lot, and some new people that were doing the hike for the first time this year, like, "Well, do you have to run?"
Yeah.
And you really don't. Like, my wife has caddied for me in the past for 9 holes here or there, and she's like, "I feel like you're running, but you're just kind of walking briskly."
Yeah.
And you know, you don't take any practice swings, and you step up and you hit the ball, and you kind of get in a groove.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, no running. I even tell my caddies, I'm like, no, there is no running allowed today. We don't do running. So.
Well, it'd be kind of hard to run for 101,000 steps. But Now, in terms of the golf itself, are you playing actual golf? Like when you hit a ball, I'm sure you never hit a ball out of bounds anything like that. But are you playing by the rules as you're playing? Or if you hit a ball into a hazard, say, do you just drop one and hit it? How closely are you keeping score while you're doing this?
Yeah, so here's the thing about the hike, and I think Jim, really emphasized this from the beginning because he didn't want it to turn into this, kind of gimmick.
Right.
So it's play by the rules. You play the ball down. You putt everything out. There's no gimmies. Even like the 2-inchers, you putt.
Right.
And so here's the beautiful thing about that I love about Ballyneal. There's no water hazards, and there are no trees. And a lot of the fairways are pretty wide because it gets pretty windy out there.
Yeah.
So, you can hit one astray, and you hit it into the prairie grass, and you usually find it. We don't look for 5 minutes.
Right.
So, you take a look for a minute, and if you don't find it, then we drop one.
Right.
So, but, yeah, other than that, everything is by the rules, which is I think is kind of cool.
It is. And what Jim said was true. This is not a gimmick just to see, we say you played 100 holes. I mean, you're playing 100 holes. And by the way, I just looked at the picture again on Twitter of Ballyneal, and it looks like Ireland. I mean, what an amazing place.
It really is. It's, you wouldn't think you'd find it in northeastern Colorado, but you feel like you're on a different planet out there. It's really special.
We're speaking with Brandon Urban, who is a Lawrencian, Kansas, and in December moved to Minneapolis, but on his Twitter account, it still says Lawrence, Kansas, because he just can't get himself to take that off.
Never going to happen.
Well, good. I like that you stand up for that. There's so much I want to talk to you about that, but I'll call you and we'll talk about all that stuff. But tell us now, this 100-hole hike idea, as I said, was to raise money for different charities. Everybody does it for a different reason. Tell us about yours.
Yeah, so I did mine this year, and this is the second time I've done it for this specific charity. But it's an organization called AXYS, mm-hmm. AXYS, and they raise money and awareness, and they help support families and individuals with X and Y chromosome disorders. So my son suffers from Klinefelter syndrome. It's an extra X chromosome, and so there's a lot of different medical stuff and
mm-hmm.
Social things that goes along with that, and we just found out when he was 12, so 4 years ago.
Wow.
And so we didn't have anywhere to look as far as support. We didn't know what we were doing. None of our medical providers knew anything about it. And so AXYS was this great organization that had a ton of resources and 3 clinics around the country. So we were really just looking for a great way to give back to them because they've helped us out immensely in the last 4 years.
Well, you are, aside from this 181-hole hike. And by the way, I'm looking at your scores here doing this. This scorecard, you actually have a scorecard for 181 holes?
Yeah, so I had to – so it was funny. I had my original – so the one you're looking at is transcribed because the one that I carried with me throughout the day looked like Sanskrit.
Yeah.
I mean, it was, because you don't have a lot of time to even write as you're walking and not enough room for 10 rounds. So I just scribble scores for the last 3 rounds on the back of the scorecard.
Mm-hmm.
So this one's all transcribed. But, yeah, I actually played really well this year. I mean, it was just the perfect day.
Well, now I feel like crap because I'm looking at some of the scores that you shot. And, when I'm riding in a cart playing 18 holes of golf, I can't shoot these scores. So the heck with you, pal. I thought I liked you, but the heck with you.
Yeah. It was funny. The 10th round of the day, I told you asked if Jim caddied for me, And he had texted me on like the 16th hole of my ninth round, and he said, "I'll caddy the 10th round for you," because he knew there was a lot of daylight left. And I'm like, "All right, awesome." I said, "The golf is not pretty." And he got on my bag, and I mean, you look at it, 10th round, we shot an 81, you know. So I birdied the 178th hole of the day, which is pretty cool.
Well, I got to tell you, this segment is one of my favorite segments that I've ever done in 4 years on this show. And you're a PTA president, you're an incredible father and husband, and the fact that you can do this and it all comes back to golf is why I love doing this show, and that I've met you through Twitter and Jim Colton. And bless you, I'm in awe of you, and I mean that.
Well, thanks. We appreciate you continuing to talk about the hike and spreading the word.
Well, hopefully, I know I've said it every year, but I'm going to really try next year to get out there with you and do this.
We would love it.
Okay. Thanks, man.
Thanks, Matthew.
See ya.
See ya.
Wow. What a fantastic show. Thanks, of course, to Perry French. Great discussion with him. To my friend Keith Hirschland, who has written the book Big Lies, but we talked mostly about Cover Me Boys, I'm Going In, and the TV production aspect of covering a major golf championship. That was great. And Brandon Urban. I mean, I really am in awe of him. I don't know what else to say. 181 holes of golf, raising money for this charity for a disease that affects his son is just... He's an amazing guy, and it's why I love doing the show. And we've never met, but we're friends because of Twitter. And I have so many great friends that I've met that way. Thanks to everybody at the Children's Charity. Another great year. And we'll tally up and see how much those people and all of us raised for the Children's Charities of the Bluegrass. Thanks to French Lick and Edwin Watts and, of course, Lexington Parks and Rec for all their support this year. We'll see you right back here next Sunday morning. It's Backspin Golf on ESPN Sports Radio.
Backspin Golf with Matthew Lawrence is sponsored by Edwin Watts Golf.